Our second case this morning is United States against Homan. Counsel for the appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court. Chief Judge Efron, with your permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
There was no good cause justifying the termination of the attorney-client relationship between Sergeant Homan and his detailed counsel, Captain Muth. As the military judge correctly found at trial, the government could have easily granted the extension request, and there would not have been any adverse consequences to that decision. As the military judge stated, the government could have approved Captain Muth's extension request without any extraordinary actions or suffering extraordinary consequences. The government assigned Captain Muth to a defense billet approximately 6 months prior to his scheduled EAS.
Why isn't this case Hutchins?
So there are many circumstances that distinguish this case from Hutchins.
Tell me.
First, in Hutchins, we had the defense counsel bears a great deal of the burden and the blame for what occurred. The defense team on numerous occasions informed the court from the military judge that he was being released. The judge reasonably relied upon those statements. In this case, in Hutchins, essentially the defense counsel dissolved away from the case. In this case, we have a defense counsel fighting to remain on the case. He submitted 2 requests to extend his active duty time to remain on the case.
One of which was granted.
One of which was granted, Your Honor. The second one, in addition, Your Honor, the defense counsel in this case, both defense counsels submitted speedy trial motions in this case. In those speedy trial motions were, especially the second one from Captain Muth, was an indicator that he was going to be departing active duty. Incorporated into that speedy trial motion was a demand for speedy trial, stating that he was leaving active duty and he wanted to get the case tried. The government bears the
burden. Did he state that motion that, and by the way, I'd like some relief from my release from active duty? Did the defense ask the military judge for help?
Prior to departing active duty, the defense did not ask the military judge for help.
Well, where does that put us in this case then?
Your Honor, at that time, the defense counsel, first of all, the military judge was perfectly aware of the situation. He did not conduct an RCMA 13 inquiry. It is a reasonable assumption that at all times that it was presented as, the defense counsel thought he had no options. He had attempted administratively to remain on active duty, and the government had denied that request. And it's important to look at the substance for the government's denial of that request. As the military judge found, it was based upon mere policy concerns that were discretionary in nature. There was Colonel Davis, who was a Vampire official, who made a discretionary decision not to allow him to stay on active duty. And
can I go back to your response to Judge Stuckey here? If you take Hutchins, which has the following statement in it, although separation from active duty normally terminates representation, highly contextual circumstances may warrant an exception from this general guidance in a particular case. I'm still looking for your highly contextual circumstances. It sounds like your highly contextual circumstances that he didn't ask the judge or the CA for relief, but the Marine Corps could have done it, and they didn't. And they had lousy reasons for not doing it. Are those your highly contextual reasons?
Your Honor, I believe that there are several. I mean,
I'm just trying to get you to be
yes, Your Honor.
Clear. What Sixth Amendment rights are being impinged upon here? What does he know that no other counsel, get particular with us rather than complain about how manpower, because then you're just joining every Marine that was ever in the Marine Corps if you're complaining about manpower.
Your Honor, I think this case actually presents for the first time a little bit of looking behind the curtain and seeing what's going on at manpower and determining that, to my knowledge, this is the first time we've actually had an indicator of what's going on and why decisions are being made. And attorneys are
Is it manpower that regulates Sixth Amendment rights in military justice?
No, Your Honor.
That's courts, right?
The
courts have something to do with that. And who went to a court in this context to litigate that issue?
Your Honor, at the time prior to the severance, it was not litigated. The military judge was fully aware of it and did not bring up her RCM 813. It was then litigated approximately 9 months later, and the military judge reevaluated his decision and found no good cause.
So let's stipulate that you're absolutely right. Manpower not only had lousy reasons, they didn't have any reasons. Okay, they just are doing the typical manpower thing of throwing names on the floor and picking them out and saying, you'll go here and you'll go there and you'll leave the Marine Corps.
Yes, sir.
What are your Sixth Amendment reasons for why it was essential, or whatever standard you want applied, for this counsel to continue in place while he was represented by other counsel?
Well, first I'll say, as a senior factor in Hutchins, this was not his third counsel. This was his detailed military defense counsel. Hutchins' counsel was a third counsel, a civilian and a military prior.
Was this counsel replaced when he left?
Yes, Your Honor.
By another detailed counsel?
He did have another detailed counsel.
Right, and he was not the first detailed counsel, was he not?
No, he was not. And in
he was what, about the third?
I believe it was the third. And again, what is the reason for this, to have so many counsel? And I think that this is one of the reasons that distinguishes this case perfectly from
Don't lose track of my question. I'll go back to all the bad reasons in a second. Tell me the Sixth Amendment contextual circumstances that are particularly apt in this case. You said he was a detailed counsel.
Okay, so detailed military counsel. He had been for approximately, at the time of severance, 9 months representing Sergeant Holman. He was a detailed military counsel.
So some measure of duration of representation.
Yes,
in this case, 9 months.
He was physically in the same location as Sergeant Holman, whereas the civilian defense counsel was traveling around the country trying cases. This is a highly specific, military-specific case involving a shooting death at a training site. He had specific knowledge. He was also...
So what did he know that another counsel, military counsel, would not know?
Your Honor, the record is not clear exactly on that. However, this Captain Muth is also acknowledged to be an experienced defense counsel. It's unclear on the record how experienced his replacement was. And Lieutenant Colonel Forkin's endorsement of his request, he states that he is one of their most highly experienced guys, and he was specifically detailed to this case because it was a complex manslaughter case. In addition, Your Honor, I believe
the nature of the offense is another of your... So it's not just that it was a military offense or a military nature offense, and also its complexity.
Yes, Your Honor.
Those are your factors as well. I'm just making a list.
That would be another factor, Your Honor.
And how are those factors not addressed by having a competent, detailed counsel take that person's place?
Well, Your Honor, I think this close source precedence would suggest that detailed military counsel aren't fungible assets to be interchanged at will. And I believe that's exactly how Colonel Davis dealt with the situation, in the exact way that we are to avoid. And this court's precedent supports that. And if one individual develops a relationship with a detailed military defense counsel, that is an attorney-client relationship that has protections, and simply placing somebody else in a situation is not sufficient. If that were the case, then this court in Baca or Cott could have stated that those individuals had detailed military defense counsel that took the places of their previous military defense counsel.
Well, the presumption is that counsel is competent, and that's the thing you got to overcome in Strickland cases. I'm not saying this is an IAC case, but you have yet to identify anything that made Muth special. Any particular aspect of the case, any particular knowledge he had that no other equally competent counsel wouldn't have had, that impacts the Sixth Amendment?
Other than the fact that for three-quarters of a year, Your Honor, he was the detailed military defense counsel.
Okay, so that's it, is what you're saying.
Well,
what was the duration for his predecessors?
You know, I do not know that answer, Your Honor.
Okay, good enough. Didn't the Marine Corps, later in this case, offer to bring him, recall him to active duty and put him on orders to do this case, and he said no?
Your Honor, he did say no.
He said no, I want to be employed as a civilian for $300 an hour.
Well, Your Honor, at that time he had already moved on. The improper severance occurred, he moved on and been employed at a private...
What's the Marine Corps supposed to do? They say, okay, you're still an inactive reservist. You wanted out. He was not riffed or anything like that. He asked to leave active duty, did he not?
Well, he refused career
designation. He refused career designation.
And then he asked twice to remain on active duty, Your Honor.
Well, that's an interesting Yeah. He refused career designation, which would have left him on active duty, and then he asked to remain on active duty. And what's Mr. Manpower over here supposed to make of that?
Well, Your Honor, he was put in an untenable position because he was detailed to a case, you know, with full knowledge that an EAS was upcoming in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to do the best he could to represent his client.
Okay.
I mean, and he was
okay. So now he's out, you know, because he refused career designation. And now the Marine Corps says, okay, you're still in the inactive reserve, and we'll put you on orders, and you can come back and do this case. And he says no.
Your Honor, he states, of course, he does state no. He states that he has duties to his, first of all, to his employer and to his current clients. I don't actually think that this is an unreasonable thing for...
Is there a statutory basis for employing civilian counsel at government expense outside of, say, the foreign criminal jurisdiction context? Do you know of any?
I'm not aware of any. However, there is the at trial, the government tried to say that there are bars to that, and those bars, ethical bars, really hold no water. This is the United States government with trillions of dollars of resources.
No. I'm not asking whether the United States government has trillions of dollars. I'm asking whether there is any statutory basis for bringing him in as a civilian counsel and paying him out of the federal treasury.
Your Honor, there is no bar to it that I'm aware of. In the government...
That's not what I'm asking. You need authorizing legislation,
yes, Your Honor,
to pay money out of the treasury. And I'm asking you if there is such a statute.
I am not aware of any. But
thank you.
The government routinely enters into contracts with individuals. It's possible that could have occurred in this case. And the government at trial had an opportunity to say that it is prohibited by statute, it's prohibited by ethical regulations. And they didn't really do a very good job of saying why it was prohibited.
You're complaining that the government now has come over to your position and saying, okay, it's not prohibited. Come on back. You know, you're once again Captain Booth. And he said, no, I want to be paid $300 an hour.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
He did say that.
Let's assume there's error in this case, that there's error in the defense counsel not adequately informing the military judge. There's error in the judge not adequately making an inquiry before departure from active duty. What specific relief are you requesting from this court?
Your Honor, I'd ask the court to reverse the NMCCA and send the case back to continue the abatement of the proceedings. At that point, the defense would certainly be free to put a motion to dismiss in, or the government could come up with potentially a way to get Captain Booth on active duty with the IRR and voluntary recall.
So that the defense wants to have Captain Booth involuntarily ordered to active duty? Is that the position of the defense in this case?
Your Honor, the position of the defense is that this case should go back to the trial court.
I'd like to know your answer to that question. What is it, and if you're not prepared to answer it, that's fine. Does the defense have a position as to whether the defense wishes to have Captain Booth ordered to active duty involuntarily at this point?
Your Honor, the government seems to take a position that it's not possible.
Let's assume that it's possible. Is it the defense position that it's not possible, that there's no statutory authority under which this reservist can be called to active duty to represent his client?
It appears to be possible under 10 U.S.C. 12.
Okay, so what's the position of the defense? Does the defense want that or not?
Your Honor, if it's possible, then yes, the defense would want that.
Okay.
That's my position as the appellate defense attorney in this case, Your Honor. He does withdraw attorneys.
Now, in terms of relief, if the record does not establish anything particular unique in terms of the relationship between Muth and the client in this case that can't adequately be served by another counsel, then even assuming error, why isn't the error cured by the representation by a second counsel and providing that counsel adequate time to prepare for the defense in this case?
Your Honor, the defense position is that this court should not be testing for prejudice in line with this court's precedent in Baca and Cott.
What about Hutchins?
In Hutchins, Your Honor, again, the situations are different.
What about Hutchins in terms of the question of testing for prejudice?
when the burden of the severance lies at the feet of the government, I believe this court's precedence is that this court should not be testing for prejudice in those circumstances, Your Honor. And that would be aligned with Gonzales-Lopez as well, the Baca and the Cott decisions. When the defense team does not bear a responsibility for what occurred, the government must bear that responsibility, and the government caused unlawful severance is not tested.
And did Hutchins say that the test for prejudice in that case was a result of the defense bearing the burden?
No, Your Honor, but I believe that the court cited two decisions that deal with that burden for specific reasons being put on the defense and a prejudice test taking place, or other circumstances different in this case. For instance, in Whiteman, this court dealt with a case of an interference, a marginal interference in an attorney-client relationship. There wasn't a full severance. The defense counsel in that case was actively participating in the 32, actively participated in pretrial negotiations and helped negotiate a pretrial agreement, in which case that this court gave great weight to that. In Rodriguez, the defense counsel, again, kind of like Hutchins, simply walked away at his own behest.
With respect to involving someone other than manpower, how is this case different than Hutchins? I mean, I understand that in this case he requested an extension of his EAD to manpower, but did he ever go to the military judge, or did he just walk away with respect to that court proceeding as far as military judge knew?
Your Honor, he did not demand relief prior to December 2009 from military judge.
Excuse me if I can't find it in the JA, but was there a session where he told the military judge that he needed to meet undetailed and that he needed to be released from representation of his client?
No, Your Honor.
Before he left active duty?
There was not, Your Honor. However, the military judge, he made it fully aware of the military judge that he was objecting administratively to his detachment from active duty and attempting to stay in active duty. He was presented with a fait accompli that he could not remain in active duty to represent his client.
Don't you think that it would have put the government in a slightly different position if he'd gone to the military judge and the military judge said, well, he was still on active duty, Marine Corps either keep him on active duty or I'm going to abate the proceedings, as opposed to waiting until he's left active duty and obtained civilian employment? So that that's difficult, depending on who you believe, and possibly impossible to return him to active duty.
Got it.
Which is a completely different question than whether it is proper or correct or ethical for attorneys to leave representation of clients who desire them to continue to represent them. That's totally a different question. But you understand my question.
I definitely understand your question, Your Honor. I would say that likely at the time of December 2009, everyone believed it was impossible for him to be placed on continue on active duty, including the military judge. And he never brought that up with the parties and said, hey, have we looked at it and said, I mean, what are my duties here to potentially look at keeping you on the case?
Where does it establish in the record that before his departure from active duty, everybody believed it was impossible for him to remain?
Your Honor, that's a reasonable inference I'm making in the record. However, it does not state that at all.
You have a further opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Efron, may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Kevin Shea, and I represent the United States. Detailed counsel was properly changed by competent detailing authority consistent with RCM 505. Should this court find the severance improper, this court can and should, consistent with its precedent, test for prejudice and find out. Addressing good cause first. Competent detailing authority, in this case, Major Thompson, the senior defense counsel, properly changed associate defense counsel when on December 1st, 2009, Captain Youth reached CAS. No new trial date was in sight, and Captain Youth's second extension was denied, for good reason, by manpower management. This court has stated that EAS is normally good cause, and in this case it certainly is. Military judge complied with RCM 813 after the severance and change of counsel by assuring on the record that the reasons for the change of counsel were present.
ZAS good cause when the Marine Corps is assigning people to defend complex cases on the eve of their separation?
Yes, it's generally good cause, Your Honor, and in this case...
So it doesn't matter what lack of foresight the Marine Corps applies in terms of how it assigns defense counsel to cases?
I think this court said in Hutchins there was a contextual analysis in that case that normally is good cause. The reason it deviated there is because the record was silent on it. Certainly better practices could have been to detail counsel a year out or more from a major case. The nature of detailing military counsel is people EAS and people leave. In this case, Captain Mute did have a relationship with the appellant, but the competent authority changed counsel. The military judge at the motions hearings on April 6th, on 2010, and thereafter established the good cause.
But didn't we say in Hutchins that, well, there might be competent authority to detail and undetail, that the competent authority to determine whether an attorney-client relationship may be severed is a military judge?
No, Your Honor, consistent with RCM 505D2B2, the competent authority at that point is the detailing authority. The military judge must, under RCM 813, and comply with 813 and ensure that the record or the reasons for that change of counsel are shown on the record. In this case, unlike Hutchins, we have that. It's clear on the record.
Yeah, how long afterwards?
Yes, Your Honor. The next time they're in court after the severance of Captain Youth and replacement with Captain Coons is April 6th of 2010.
Which is how long afterwards?
5 months, Your Honor.
5 months.
Approximately.
Okay. How many detailed counsel did the appellant have in this case?
He's had five, Your Honor.
He's had five, counting the successor to Muth.
That's correct. He fired two. He had one that he released, Captain Muth, and then now Captain Coons.
Okay. And how long has he had his civilian counsel?
4.5 years, Your Honor. He hired Mr. Lowe in November of 06.
Okay.
This case is more like Stanton than it is Hutchins in the sense that counsel has EAS known prior to being detailed, even there where the appellant in Stanton...
Can I go back to your five-month time gap? You're saying everything was done just as it should be done?
Again, Your Honor, in a perfect world, counsel would have been detailed far earlier. This case would have wrapped up earlier. But it certainly complied with RCM 505 and the military...
Would it have complied with... 505 and 813, if it turned out that there had been no representation of the appellant from December 1st to April 6th?
It certainly would have potentially triggered, arguably could have triggered a Sixth Amendment issue. However, in this case, we have Mr. Lowe on the case throughout, so there was no gap in counsel.
Is it the intention of 813 that it be done contemporaneously with the severance of counsel or done at the convenience of all the parties? Sometime thereafter.
Yes, Your Honor.
To not make it a loaded question.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
But the real question is 813 silent either in terms of its text or its implications as to when it's supposed to happen, or is it intended to happen at the time the severance actually occurs?
It's not plainly clear from the text of 813 that it has to be contemporaneous. Looking back to this court's opinion in Hutchins, it seemed concerned that there the military judge failed to comply with 813. But there was confusion as to where Captain Bass was, when he asked, or was he on terminal leave.
So what could happen under 813 if it takes place after the individual separated, and let's assume a situation where the individual has no continuing military status? The judge exercise the general power of the judiciary to order somebody to represent a client without pay at that point? What do you do under 813 if it turns out that the judge has a problem with the separation?
That would fall under the record setting forth the basis for the good cause determination by the competent detailing authority. If the record plays out that there was no good cause, then at that point the defense can say, hey, look, there was no good cause to sever this relationship and properly raise that motion.
And what does the judge do if he's holding an 813 proceeding after the separation from active duty has already taken place?
Your Honor, in that case, you might have proper cause to either seek to recall counsel or proper cause to actually order an abatement. In this case, the reason it wasn't proper...
How do you recall counsel who has no military status? Do you pay him the $300 contract that they're asking for in this case?
No, Your Honor. The government's aware of no statutory authority which requires or permits the government to pay for detailed
counsel. So does the judge then order counsel to provide services without payment?
No, Your Honor.
Do you understand that the issue is, what if at that point on April 6th, the judge says there are, in fact, highly contextual circumstances that may warrant exception from this general guidance? And the chief judge's question is, now what do you do?
I think you look to a remedy similar in Hutchins, where there was continuance granted. In this case, a continuance...
But doesn't that point out that the 8-13 session has to take place before the person leaves active duty? Otherwise, you've got a fouled-up case in which you're trying to put Band-Aids on to put it together?
Absolutely, Your Honor, it would be ideal. I mean, it should be pointed out that the military judge on November 16th in the motions hearing attempted to bring this up, and I think the appellant wants to wash over this fact and ignore it. The reality is the military judge said, hey, look, Captain Muth is reaching his EAS on December 1st. Do you want to keep him or do you want to release him? He didn't get an answer because his main counsel interjected. Now, at that point...
Is that counsel's problem or is that the judge's problem? Since when do counsel get to decide when they're going to answer questions from judges?
Yes, Your Honor.
Assuming there's no privilege involved in the case.
Yes, Your Honor. It's relevant to the court that's determining the 8-13 considerations in this case. The military judge attempted to broach the issue prior to severance. The next time they were in court, the military judge properly stated that Captain Coons had replaced Captain Muth. Captain Coons placed his qualifications on the records that he'd been detailed by the senior defense counsel. And 8-13 was substantially applied.
So why didn't the military judge err? Why don't we conclude that the military judge erred in not getting an answer to the question he properly asked prior to separation?
Because it's not required in order to comply with RSM 813, Your Honor.
Does there exist statutory authority to recall Captain Muth to active duty? Involuntarily.
Involuntarily, Your Honor. Lieutenant Colonel Davis, Marine Corps Manpower, testified that at that point, under the manner in which Captain Muth left active duty, it didn't appear the Marine Corps was involuntarily recalling under these circumstances and wouldn't qualify as
anything. Is Davis a lawyer?
No, Your Honor, he is not.
Okay.
The record is certainly not clear on that.
Okay, so he was asked for a legal conclusion, he gave one, and everybody just went on.
So is it the position of the United States government that you have no authority to call a reservist to active duty to serve as a defense counsel under any circumstance now present?
No, Your Honor, it's not the government's position.
Then what is the government's position?
The government's position is that good cause did exist to sever the attorney-client.
No, that's not the question. The question is there authority to recall this officer who is, as I understand it, an inactive reservist? He has a military status.
That's correct, Your Honor.
He has a red ID card, or used to have a red ID card when they had red ID cards. Is there authority to recall him to active duty for this purpose?
If appropriate authority indicated or believed that it constituted those circumstances where IRR is appropriate, Captain Muth could likely be recalled in that circumstance. The government's position is it's not necessary to reach that conclusion in this case because that would have to overcome the first issue of whether or not there was good cause to sever the relationship. In this case,
well, counsel, I'm asking the question. You may not like the question, but I'd like it answered. And I think you've answered it to the extent you can.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Let's try this. Should we proceed on the assumption that the Marine Corps has the authority to call Captain Muth to active duty?
You may for purposes, obviously, Your Honor. It doesn't change the good cause determination.
Thank you.
It should be a prejudice analysis if there is one.
Counsel, is it the government's position that a defense attorney has no obligation whatsoever to make a request to the military judge to withdraw from the attorney-client relationship when he knows he's going to be reassigned or get out of the service if a detailing authority somewhere has authorized a new assignment?
The RCM only provides for a separate circumstance, one obviously being proper withdrawal, another being other good cause. And if EAS...
Does that individual attorney have a responsibility to request withdrawal from the attorney-client relationship, or is he excused completely from that once a detailing authority acts?
No, Your Honor, I don't see an obligation there.
But then why does it say upon request of the accused or application for withdrawal when it says for other good cause shown on the record?
He didn't request it to be withdrawn or to be released in this case, Your Honor. The competent detailing authority found other good cause shown on the record. The military judge developed those facts on the record pursuant to RCM 813. There's no requirement that Captain Muth request to be withdrawn from this case.
But under 505, at least the way that I'm reading it, 505B2B, it says that after there's formation of an attorney-client relationship, and it gives different ways that relationship can be severed, three different ways. I think we'll all agree this isn't 506B3. He didn't make a request or application for withdrawal, and then the other one is other good cause shown on the record. And so even if that can be done by the person competent to detail such counsel, doesn't it look as though that decision has to be put on the record before the relationship is severed?
The good cause has to be on the record to justify the competent detailing authority's decision to replace counsel pursuant to RCM 505D2B3. That other good cause is there. There's no requirement that the attorney expressly withdraw from representation. I apologize if I'm not understanding your question, Your Honor. Is there a requirement that he request to withdraw? No, there's not. Not under RCM 505. In this case, Captain Youth expressed a state as he was approaching. He did note from the military judge that he requested an extension. At that point, he had explained where the situation was. There was no confusion. Some of the facts and circumstances in Hutchins regarding the confusion of counsel and rights in that case are not present here.
Well, this may be a little outside of the scope of this case, and if you're not prepared to answer, that's fine. But isn't there an ethical requirement that an individual request permission to sever the attorney-client relationship at an attorney?
In this case, obviously, Captain Youth, at least his trial date was approaching, or his December 1st date was approaching, he was no longer requesting to leave active duty, and that's the issue here. He had denied career designation. He was expected to execute his EAS. But as December 1st approached, he was not looking to get out of the Marine Corps. At that point, at least, he was attempting to stay on Appellant's case.
Well, counsel, and excuse me if I'm wrong, if it's outside of the scope of the case, I'm sorry, but in every place that I'm aware of, if a client wants someone to stay on as their attorney, and the attorney wants to sever the relationship, they need to run it by the judge.
Yes, Your Honor, except this court has held in the past throughout that EAS is normally a good cause. Even
but,
in Stanton,
but that's fine, well, and good, but shouldn't the military judge make that determination before he leaves?
Military judge broached the issue with the appellant. No answer was provided. At the next motions hearing on April 6, 2010, the military judge complied with RCM 813, noted that good cause on the record, that Captain Youth had been detailed and replaced by Captain Coons pursuant to Captain Youth's EAS.
Okay, so what date was the attorney-client relationship severed?
December 3rd of 2009, Your Honor.
And did the military judge make any determination as to whether there was good cause prior to that happening?
Prior to that date?
Yeah.
And I apologize if I'm understanding correctly. Prior to December 3rd, did the military judge make a determination?
As to whether there's good cause for severance of the attorney-client relationship.
Not prior to December 3rd. However, if you look at the record at page 11 of the April 6, 2009 transcript, the military judge notes that Captain Muth reaches the AS, he was denied an extension, and then he said, quote, that's probably going to come under the good cause problem. The facts are there.
But the question dealt with prior to.
Not prior to, Your Honor.
It's 5 months later. I mean, that's absolutely useless. But, I mean, none of this has anything to do with your argument, I think, which is that there's no prejudice, so it doesn't matter. But it seems like a passing strange way to run attorney-client relationships when it comes to defense counsel being detailed to defend criminal defendants when you have an EAS approaching.
Captain Muth reached EAS on December 1st. Captain Coons was detailed 2 days later and changed by competent detailing authority. Granted, the record didn't pick up again until April. There's no requirement, at least not expressly from the RCMs, that decision be contemporaneous or that hearing be held contemporaneous with the exchange of counsel. At the next motions hearing in this case, the issue was touched upon and the record began to develop why there was good cause for this severance. Your Honor, you touched upon the prejudice in this case. Again, obviously the government has laid out all the facts for why there was good cause to sever this relationship. Should this court find there was no good cause, this court can and should test for prejudice. This is not a Sixth Amendment violation. There is no structural error in this case as well. The four factors this court looked to in Hutchins for why there's no structural error can be used here as well. The first factor being there's counsel throughout. As discussed, Mr. Lowe had been on the case now for 4.5 years, so 5 detailed counsel throughout. Replacement counsel was detailed as well. Captain Coons has now been on this case for 17 months. It continues to grant in Hutchins. Similarly here, the functional equivalent has been a 12-month continuous. This case was taken up May 25th, 2009, after NMCCA decided Hutchins, and at that point, this case had been on hold. And that fourth factor, the personnel action which led to the severance, it resulted from Captain Muth denying career designation, reaching his EAS. This court said that in that context, there was no structural error. This court can and should test for prejudice in this case, should find that no good cause exists to sever the relationship. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
Counsel, I have a question as to what your position is if we were to believe that, A, there was good cause B, there's no prejudice, but C, the procedure was messed up. What, in your view, would the relief be due to your client under those circumstances? Meaning that if things had been done the way that they should have been done in a timely fashion, everything that happened would have been just fine. And I'm not saying that that's what we think, but if we did think that, and the only error that there is here is that the procedures were not properly followed.
So that you're assuming good cause existed.
We're assuming that if the military judge had been asked in December of 2009 instead of deciding the issue well after the fact, if he'd been asked by the counsel, if he said I asked to stay but I can't stay and I need to have the relationship severed as the detailing authority has agreed, and the military judge said yes, I find that good cause exists, and your relationship is severed. Sorry, appellant.
So, Your Honor, in that case, this court would, I believe, test for prejudice because there wouldn't be an improper severance. And then this court would do its own prejudice analysis in response to Judge Baker's questions and tried to lay out why I believe prejudice exists in this case based upon Captain Muth's 9-month relationship with Sergeant Homan.
So you're saying that you think that if the military judge had made the decision in December of 2009 that he made in April of 2010 with respect to whether that was a good cause for severance, that it wouldn't be good cause? I'm sorry, you're saying that release from active duty couldn't have been good cause under the facts and circumstances of this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because what specific special qualities did this defense counsel have that were not equally evident in his replacement?
Well, Your Honor, I've tried to speak a bit about, like, in terms of good cause, and also looks to the government's reasoning, right, and why does the government's reasoning for severing that relationship, was that truly extraordinary circumstances? And the military judge's findings of fact is that it was the opposite of truly extraordinary circumstances. It would have been easy for them to have extended on active duty. Those can't be truly extraordinary circumstances justifying the termination of attorney-client relationship. This could have been a paperwork affair for Lieutenant Colonel Davis to continue on active duty. And so I think, Your Honor,
part of the problem with all of that, of course, is something that I think the questions of several of the judges have touched on, is that neither your client nor the attorney went to the military judge ahead of time, right? So this is all after the fact.
Your Honor, it certainly wasn't ideal prior to December. However, I would argue that the defense counsels in this case, including Captain Muth, had demanded speedy trial twice and specifically stated that Captain Muth stated his demand, I'm leaving active duty in December, I believe, at that point, and I want to get this case tried by that point. I think that is a... The military judge was perfectly on notice of this issue, and while he didn't go and ask for relief, that is his relief. He was asking for this case to be tried prior to him going on.
And that issue is still alive in the case, correct? We're not asked to rule on that now. That's something that the judge can consider in further proceedings, and if the ruling is adverse to the accused, and if the accused is convicted, it would be an issue on appeal.
Certainly, Your Honor, and I certainly don't mean to say that issue is to be decided by this court. I just want to say that issue is an indicator that he's asking for relief because his EAS is upcoming. Now, he didn't do it probably the best way that he could have prior to December, but that is a request for relief because his EAS is arriving and he's asking for a speedy trial. Your Honor, so I just take, if I may, I'm a little over time, if I may.
You can make a further point and then briefly conclude.
Your Honor, the government has indicated several times that the detailing authority released him for good cause. There's really no indication of this. The detailing authority was presented with a situation where the government had prohibited Captain Muth from staying on active duty, and the detailing authority merely assigned someone new. The detailing authority didn't come into court and say, we believe that this is good cause. In fact, the detailing authority objected as well to Captain Muth leaving active duty. So the detailing authority did not make any good cause determination. In summary, Your Honor, the opposite of truly extraordinary circumstances are circumstances in which it is easy for the government to extend someone in active duty. For this reason, we ask the court to reverse the MCCA decision and return the case to the trial.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is submitted, and the court will be in recess pending further order of the court.
Court stands adjourned until further order of the court.